Straight from the source tonight, please be seated. The 12 New Yorkers will decide the fate of a former president of the United States, now criminal defendant. A roller coaster day in court ends with a jury of his peers now picked in the case of the people of the state of New York versus Donald J. Trump. What we've learned tonight with opening statements as soon as Monday. Also, why prosecutors are refusing to tell the defense who their first witnesses are. The judge appearing to agree that the former president simply can't be trusted for certain to contain himself. And the Kennedys versus a Kennedy. Six of RFK Jr.'s own siblings very publicly snubbed their brother and endorsed Joe Biden for re-election. My source tonight is RFK Jr.'s sister, Carrie Kennedy. Is it a family feud or just plain politics? I'm John King, and for Caitlin Collins, this is The Source. A rough start, but then rapid progress on day three. Rough because two jurors previously seated in Donald Trump's historic hush money trial were stunningly dismissed. A New York criminal court quickly, though, made up for lost time, not only filling those two lost seats, but also picking five more jurors to round out the full panel of 12. Seven men and five women, one alternate juror also selected, before the court wrapped for the day. The search goes on for more jurors tomorrow. We don't know all the specifics about why those two jurors were excused. One, though, did raise concerns that part of her identity was being shared publicly. Prosecutors raised concern about the other juror, though the judge did not make public the ultimate reason for letting him go. What we do know is that Trump made it through the whole process today without getting scolded by the judge like he did on Tuesday for muttering aloud and potentially intimidating some of those jurors. He was said to be engrossed with the process today, craning his neck at times to get a good view of those seated in the jury box as they gave their answers. When he left the courtroom, an attempt to sway a different jury, voters.
I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial. These are all stories. This is over the last few days from legal experts. This is Wall Street Journal editorial. But all of these are stories from legal experts saying how this is not a case. Brad crosses the Rubicon, indicting Trump on that sense. The whopping outrage in Trump's indictment. The whole world is watching this hoax.
He brought props today, an armful of papers, articles he claims back up his arguments that the case is weak or worse. That actually went on and on and on for a couple of minutes. He complained, yes, he complained about the temperature in the courtroom and also about the trial taking him off the campaign trail. But according to him, all his legal troubles are actually helping his campaign. Time, of course, will tell us about that. First, Donald J. Trump has to get through the trial. A load to take apart on day three. We also just heard for the first time from one of those two jurors dismissed today after being sworn in. We'll tell you why prosecutors won't be sharing their list of first witnesses with the Trump team, with the blessing so far, at least, of the judge. But first, let's get right to some of our best legal sources. Our CNN anchor, chief legal analyst Laura Coates, CNN legal analyst and criminal defense attorney Joey Jackson, attorney Renato Stabile, and veteran New York trial attorney Arthur Idala. Laura, let's begin with you. First, big picture, then we'll get into some of the specifics. What stands out to you about the jury? We now have the 12, seven men, five women, plus the one alternate more to come. But what stands out to you about this jury?
The breadth of what their experiences are. Some don't have social media. Others have been well-versed in reading The Art of the Deal and also find him in some way intriguing. But others are from different states, not native New Yorkers. Others are from different countries. You've got really the gamut of the cultural melting pot that is New York, which really makes you wonder who is going to be either the wild card or the blank slate you can actually persuade. That's going to be where the jurors are going to have the most impact for these particular attorneys.
Why?
Well, because this is what's interesting to me is that this is a very sophisticated jury. You have two lawyers, you have people in finance. Obviously, both sides wanted people that had some education, some sophistication, because there are complicated financial issues here. There are complicated legal issues here. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, let's walk through some of it. New juror two, an investment banker. He says he did read The Art of the Deal. New juror four, a security engineer who's married, three kids. Juror eight, retired wealth manager who's married with two kids. Juror nine, a speech therapist with a master's degree. She's not married, lives alone. Juror 10 works in e-commerce, says he doesn't really follow the news. Juror 11, who we'll talk more about in a minute, works for an apparel company. She's unmarried, doesn't have kids. The final juror seated, physical therapist. She has a doctorate degree, says she reads the New York Times, USA Today, and CNN. If you're the defense team, from what I just went through and what they're hearing as they're asked these questions in court, where's your mind tonight?
So big picture, what I do not like are the attorneys on the jury, period. Generally speaking, we excuse attorneys right away.
That's it used to be rude, the law. Joey.
It is, isn't it?
You're not going to hold lawyers here.
We excuse lawyers right away. And it used to be the law, in fact, that lawyers couldn't serve. And the reason I don't like that is because part of, I think, the argument here is what we call as lawyers jury nullification. What does that mean in English? This is a system that's run amok. We shouldn't be here. What are we doing? This is the weaponization of the prosecution. I don't think that that falls really well on attorneys. I think us lawyers, right, I think we are trained to evaluate facts, to look at issues. And I just don't like, right, we have varying opinions about that, but I'm concerned about that.
Come in, Arthur, but I want to ask you first to get more specific about it. I said we'd come back to one of the jurors. This is the questioning of Juror 11. Both teams were done with their strikes. You get a chance that the defense can stand up and say, got to go. You get 10 opportunities to say, don't have to explain your reason. That person has to go. You get 10 of those. They were done with those. Here's what the questioning of Juror 11. Juror, I don't like his persona. She's talking about Donald Trump. I don't like some of my coworkers, but I don't try to sabotage their work. He just seems very selfish and self-serving. The Trump lawyer asked, sounds like you're saying you don't like him. The juror said, yes. That person's now on the jury. The judge said he was convinced, despite what her opinion is, she can be fair and impartial. You're shaking your head.
That's where a judge plays such a pivotal role, because you're correct about the peremptory challenges, but there's also for cause challenges. That, if that's not a reason to say, judge, you can't put this person on the jury. She's basically telling you she doesn't like this guy. You know, if that happened in any other case, any other judge would say, yeah, okay, she knows Mr. Jackson because he was the coach of the kids' baseball team and he didn't put her son in, and so she doesn't like him. He would be off the jury. That annoys me. That bothers me. And that's not cool. And I can see the jury consultant nod his head.
But it's not any other case. Right. You're not going to find 12 people who don't know about Donald Trump.
No, but you can find people who don't say they don't like her, who say, I really don't have an opinion. There's people who don't know social media. There's people who don't follow the news. You got a woman here who says, I don't like the guy.
And yeah, he had plenty more people left.
Not my cup of tea.
You've heard the judge. And in cases, you know that judges will try to rehabilitate, in a sense, always, the jury. Because they know they've got a finite number of people who are going to perform this civic duty.
They've got hundreds of people to choose from. You're
correct. But at the same token, if the judge says, all right, knowing that, can you put that aside? Now, I agree, if I were defense counsel, that would not make me comfortable. But the judge is essentially knowing what the dirty little secret in jury selection. A lot of it is self-disclosure and the honor system, right? Of, yeah, you know what, Your Honor, I could put all of that aside. Now it's up to your gut check and intuition to do so. Back to your point, though, one reason you don't want to have lawyers on the panel as well is because the prosecution and defense, they want to be the ones that you're relying on. Most jurors are going to look to the lawyers on the panel and turn and go, wait a second, is that right? What do you think about that, right?
So what's the conversation with the defense team if you're advising them and they have a juror that they're nervous about? That juror's going to be there when we start on Monday or Tuesday. That juror's going to be there when you have opening arguments, when you start bringing up your witnesses. What are you looking for, and how do you think, okay, we know the person at least started with an unfavorable opinion of our client. How do we fix it?
Well, they're going to be focused on juror number 11. Are you going to be watching that person's social media? Is that person going to maybe violate the judge's orders, which jurors do, even in not so high profile cases? Is there something that they didn't disclose that you can come back to the court and say, you know what, judge, she should have been honest about this. This person wasn't. They have to go.
But, John, one quick point we should point it out is that she also gave the indication that there are coworkers that I don't like either, but I don't take things out on them. So we talk about rehabilitation. She indicated that she still could be fair, notwithstanding her not liking it. Look, challenge for cause potentially could have been granted, but I think the rehabilitation keeps her on the jury. I think the judge made a judgment call, which is well within his discretion.
By the way, the likability, if that's what this case is coming down to, you don't have likability. Witnesses as well. I mean, this is not a case where you've got Mother Teresa and Mother Teresa's clone and then her other clone. You have the prosecution already fronting in this case. Hey, there are going to be people here that might have a past or a personality that you do not like. Can you see beyond that if we prove our burden? And that could be the case.
When we began the day, it looked like we were going in the wrong direction. Right? They made progress later, but at the beginning, two jurors who had previously been seated were dismissed. One was a woman who came in, essentially told the judge, people pushed to her social media, family and friends, that her identity had been exposed, or at least nearly exposed, by media coverage and the like. what do you make of when something like that happens? And the judge said, we've lost a good jury here.
Yeah, it's been made a problem, and the press was pointed out as being a source of that issue. I know, of course, CNN has gone to great lengths to ensure that we are able to both preserve the opportunity for the public to understand a case and know about it and balance against the anonymity reasons. But there's also a thing called prior restraint. So I know the judge wants to be able to say, you've got to be very cautious about what you disclose because I have a jury and a trial. But we also have a thing that you can't necessarily tell the press. You cannot publish something in advance. It's public knowledge information, but it's always going to be this balancing test between what you can say in the public square and also preserving the right to a fair trial, and that includes a jury who doesn't feel intimidated.
The second juror who was sent home by the judge after prosecutors raised concerns that he was not honest, did not disclose during the questioning process that 30-plus years ago, had had a conviction for tearing down political signs. And he gave an interview, that juror gave an interview with USA Tonight saying he was surprised he was dismissed. He called Mershon a cowardly judge for allowing the prosecution to bring up an arrest from a decade ago. He said, quote, I thought it was just an excuse for prosecutors to get him off the jury. He called Mershon a coward. Would you have done that? Would you have stood up and said, wait, number one, he didn't tell the truth. Number two, it's taking down political signs. Most of them were Republican, apparently, 30 years ago.
That's the issue. The issue is the dishonesty, not being candid. I mean, that's not something you forget to disclose. So, and believe me, this is not over. Both sides, and particularly the defense, are going to continue to look into these jurors' backgrounds to see if there's anything else that they forgot to disclose. And don't overlook the alternates. We're going into the alternates tomorrow. I predict not all of these jurors are going to make it through a several-week trial. The alternates are going to be absolutely critical here.
So, case hasn't started yet, but from day one and even pretrial stuff, you're making notes if you're the defense team in case Donald Trump is convicted. What might we appeal? What have you seen here?
No, I already got them rattled off. The first thing has to do with this Sandoval issue. So they wanted they were too late in bringing up these are the things we want to talk to Donald Trump about if he testifies. You got to do that before the lawyers start questioning the jurors, so they have the opportunity to question the jurors about that. Number one, number two, that should have been filed under seal so it doesn't taint the whole jury pool. In the Harvey Weinstein case, we did it 4 months ahead of time, under seal, with a sealed courtroom when we had the hearing. So those are the first two things. The third thing I'm doing is, Your Honors of the Appellate Division, you had a juror who we asked for cause. She said she doesn't like this guy. She doesn't like this guy, and they still sat him when there was 500 people outside. I want a reversal on that as well. And I'm giving up on Juror 11. I'm just saying, okay, Mr. Trump, we're not getting an acquittal here. We're getting a hung jury at best. And so let's focus on the three or four people who are going to say, no, we're not convicting this guy, and go to Joey's point and go with the jury nullification, tell the jurors their justice, and you decide that this case is BS, Michael Cohen is BS, and Stormy Daniels is BS, and come back and say not guilty.
So we're in what I'll call the final stretch before the opening act, if you will. You have to finish out the jury. You got 12 jurors seated, one alternate selected. We still need 5 alternates. Opening arguments could come as early as Monday. So if you're the jurors, if you're the attorneys, you're double busy tonight because you still have to focus on this important part. One or two of those alternates could end up in the room at the end of the day. But you're also thinking, whoa, we got to be ready for Monday. What next?
Well, getting ready includes knowing thy audience and the audience and how you're going to craft your opening statements and opening arguments and how you might want to tailor the presentation of evidence according to who's there. There's a reason you want to have as much information as possible about who is in front of you, because there might be moments, little Easter eggs of sort, where you're going to try to appeal to a particular juror without coming out right and looking in the eye and saying, I'm talking to you and you, and I say this point. That's going to be part of it. But also, this is not a cakewalk sort of case. They have got to meet their burden. So the prosecution can't go in there and think to themselves, hey, a lot of people know this. They might know the players here. My work is really done. Now the work begins. And in many ways, because people are familiar with at least the players in this, that could work against you, because as much as they formed an opinion about Trump, they likely have one about Stormy Daniels. They likely have one about Michael Cohen. In fact, one says he follows him on Twitter, and he's on the case. Oh, sorry, X.
X. This is first a legal question, but it's also a political question. And it's a question about how Judge Mershon is proceeding pretty quickly here, right? We got through jury selection. They dealt with the hiccups today. Says we want to start it as early as Monday. Says he won't give them Tuesday off. The Trump team wanted that. Passover's Monday night into Tuesday. He said no. I said we're going to proceed. Is that his style from a legal standpoint, number one? And number two, does this factor into it all, that Donald Trump doesn't want to be here, but now he is? And now that he is in a New York courtroom, their approach is, let this go on as long as we possibly can, because once it's done, there are other trials. And so he's trying to delay everything. This one he couldn't delay. Now that it's started, do you want to stretch it?
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the reality. The reality is that, in my view, the judge is doing what he should do. I think this judge, in indicating from the outset, John, that if you self-identify as not being fair, I'm just going to remove you. And I think that's sort of the retort to Arthur's very good point about whether someone should have been removed for cause. I think it's going in the manner that it should. I think we have a jury. It's not surprising that it took this. You only have 10 peremptory strikes with respect to discretionarily removing people. And I think that you can potentially have a jury that's fair, that's honorable, and that could make a decision based on the law and the facts that they'll be instructed to make.
Great conversation tonight. Many more days of it to come. Laura Coates, Joey Jackson, Renato, and Arthur, thank you all for being here. We'll continue this conversation, including next up ahead for us. Prosecutors now refusing to give the defense their initial witness list. And they say there's a big reason for that. Trump. And the judge says he can't fault them. Plus, imagine running for president and seeing your brothers and sisters stumping for another candidate. A show of force from the Kennedys today. For Biden, not RFK Jr., Kerry Kennedy is here with more on that very public family snub.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life, lately we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're heading for opening statements in Donald Trump's criminal trial as soon as Monday. And because of that, something very interesting happened right near the end of court today. The defense asked prosecutors to share their list of the first witnesses. And the district attorney's office refused, which is their right. And they cited as their reason the defendant, Trump, and his previous attacks on the witnesses. He's gone after, among others, Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. Trump's team tried to assure the judge that the former president would keep quiet about the witnesses. But the judge wasn't buying it, telling Trump's lawyer, quote, "I don't think you can make that representation." Joining me now, Judge Shira Shenlin, who served as a federal judge for 22 years on the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. Judge, grateful for your time. Common courtesy says you do that in most cases. How unusual is it for the prosecution to say, sorry, no?
I think it's very unusual. It is courteous to let you know who the witnesses are going to be. The lawyers have a right to prepare for cross-examination. They have a right to know who's coming up on Monday. They want to work all weekend and be ready for that. So it's highly unusual for the prosecution to say no.
So would you have encouraged them? A, can the judge say do it anyway, or is it up to the prosecution, but the judge can simply try to persuade them otherwise? And what would you have done?
No, the judge. Okay, the judge would have had the power, if he wanted to say, no, I think you need to give them the witness list for Monday, and I'm telling you to do it. I probably would have given that witness list because so many statements have already been made about so many of these witnesses that it's hard to believe that anything new is going to come out over the weekend. Obviously, Trump is on notice that he has or will violate the gag order, depending what he says about witnesses. And I think that's getting through to him at this point. And his lawyer said, look, I'll represent that he won't say anything about these people. And I thought the judge should give the lawyer a chance and say, okay, I'll trust you this time. But if anything comes out, that's the last time I trust you. So you're on notice too. And I think that would have been the better way to handle it.
Okay, let's move on to a separate issue, but it also involves the same parties and the question of how much elasticity is the word I'll use the judge has left. Prosecutors say Trump has violated his gag order 7 more times just since Monday, including one post in which he writes, liberal activists are lying to get on the jury. He's quoting a Fox News host there. It's not a repost. It's Trump's own hands typing something he heard on television. Is that not crossing the line, violating the gag order?
You see, I'm not sure I think so, because the point of the gag order is to prevent any threats or intimidation of jurors, of the prosecutor, of the court staff. This doesn't talk about any particular witness or juror or court staff or family member. It's his overall statement of what he thinks people do. They want to get on the jury to get Trump. That's his view. So I think you have to be careful with a gag order. You don't want to broaden it beyond the parameters that are set in the gag order itself. I think you have to interpret it narrowly because it does stop speech. So I think gag orders are fine, but they should be interpreted as narrowly as possible. And the purpose of this gag order has repeatedly been said, you can't threaten or intimidate or put in harm's way a juror, a juror's family, a court staff, prosecutors, et cetera, or judge's family.
Is there anything you can do, though? Prosecutors have previously said Trump should be fined $1,000 each time he violates the order. That hasn't stopped Trump. You say some of this might be up against the line, but not a violation, but close to it. As a judge, what would you try to say to contain him, if that's possible? Others have tried.
I'm not sure it's possible to contain Donald Trump. But what I would say is, I'm going to admonish you this time. I'm not going to fine you this time. But I'm telling you, you are walking right up to that line. And the second you cross it, given that I just warned you, I am going to fine you, and it's going to be heavy fines. And after a number of fines, you know what comes next. I have the power, if I want to exercise it, to put you in prison for contempt. I can do that. And I'm not playing around with you. So that's how I think I would handle it. I'd give him a stern admonition and tell him what's coming if he crosses that line.
Judge Shira Shandlin, grateful for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next for us, some brand new reporting on some frustrations for the Trump team today after one juror in particular was dismissed.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Learning more about what Donald Trump was like inside the court today as his trial jury was rounding out, craning his neck at times, we are told, to get a good look at the jurors, appearing keenly attentive to those seated in the jury box. Also, apparently particularly chilly inside the courtroom today. Trump joked about it with reporters when leaving for lunch and complained about it at the end of the day outside.
I'm sitting here for days now, from morning till night, in that freezing room, freezing. Everybody was freezing in there.
Our source tonight on all things Trump, CNN correspondent Kristen Holmes. Temperature okay in here?
Feels good, yeah. Okay, much warmer here.
Much warmer here. Look, he was clearly frustrated outside the court, complaining about the temperature, complaining about the case, holding up those documents. That's the theater he does, which is part of his politics. How are they feeling, your sources inside Trump world, about where we are?
Well, I think right now the number one sentiment is this is really happening. All of these attempts to delay, they have been overturned. All of this effort to disqualify jurors, to say that it was impossible to get a fair jury, there has now been a jury set. This is moving forward. One thing I think that you should expect from Trump world, not necessarily the former president himself because of the gag order, but you should expect to hear Trump allies continuing to rip apart this jury, to say that they are left-leaning, that it is going to be impossible. Remember, they have all the same access to what we have inside of the courtroom. Any kind of documents, sure, it's not their identity, but they have what kind of news they consume, any kind of thing that they said about their views about Donald Trump. Anyone who has gotten a pool report can see that. And remember, the only discretion that we got from the judge was use common sense at certain points. So people's versions of common sense are very different when it comes to what you do in terms of the media. So you should expect these right-wing army of social media, you know, followers to be pushing this forward.
And so to that point, excellent art of the segue. We talked about juror number 11 with the attorneys earlier. She admitted, doesn't like Trump's persona, said he seems very selfish, very self-serving. Knowing Trump as well as you do, how hard is him for him to sit there and listen to that from a juror? And he's from Florida now. He moved to Florida, but from a fellow New Yorker.
Well, just remember that Donald Trump has not been in a room with someone who's going to say no to him or insult him for decades now. He purposely surrounds himself with people who are even the people who now say that when he was in the administration that they, you know, tried to stop him from doing things. Many of those are profiles in Courage because during the time they weren't actually trying to stop him. It was later. He surrounds himself with people who say yes to him, who compliment him constantly. As we know, I've heard some of his aides and advisors talk about how good he looks, how great his suit is, what a good job he's doing in between various speeches or talking to reporters. That is what he likes the most. So hearing a group of people talk bad about him, and remember, it wasn't just her. I mean, it was over and over again. Different people saying they didn't like his policies. They didn't want him to be in office again. This is something that's going to grate at him. And we're just getting started. These are strangers now. He's going to also have to sit through the testimony of various witnesses who really hate him, like Michael Cohen, like Stormy Daniels. So this is just getting started.
You know the history. He doesn't always listen to advice. But what advice are you hearing his attorney and his political people are telling him about how he looks at the jury, making sure he doesn't scowl or seem intimidating, or does he want to do that, and what he does on social media?
Well, in terms of social media, they have advised him on the gag order. Now, I think it's interesting when we just heard what the judge said, what you had as a guest, talking about walking up to that line, saying you're almost going to cross it, you have to stop. We have been told by advisors that his lawyers have coached him on just how to go up to the line without crossing it over. And in fact, some of his social media posts that are questionable have been looked at by his attorneys because he doesn't want to pay the money, right? Even if it's $3,000 for Donald Trump, he doesn't want to pay a cent. So the idea is that he doesn't want to breach this gag order. So that's what they're being told on social media in particular.
Kristen brought her lawyers with us, so let's bring them back into the conversation. Arthur Idala, Renato Stabile, and Joey Jackson. Joey, if you're at the Trump defense table or you're meeting with him at the hotel or Trump Tower tonight to talk about tomorrow, what are you telling him? Again, not that he'll listen, but what are you telling him about how he what his appearance should be, how he should comport himself, whether he should look at the jurors at all, and if he does, how?
So I don't think it matters, John, because I think he keeps his own counsel. And I think that Trump is used to telling other people what to do, not being told what to do. And ultimately, he's going to do what he wants to do. Remember that there's two sides to this. One is the in court and what the facts and evidence will ultimately show now that we have a jury. But the other is the other audience. Right. And that's the audience who will be a voting public. And so I wonder how the judge is going to deal with on Tuesday when they have the hearing, the gag order issue. Will the judge issue an admonishment? Will the judge put him in jail? Will the judge issue fines? And so, yes, final point, you should have some decorum in court. You should respect the process, the protocols, the issues. But I think he has imperatives not to. And if he does get held in contempt and put in jail, does it delay the trial? Does he want to do that? So he'll do what Trump does.
Most people don't think he's going to testify. But let me combine the legal and the political. I got 77 million votes. I'm assuming he thinks there's some way to win over those people, win over at least the one he needs.
Oh, for sure. And look, he said he's going to testify. I think there's a very good chance he is going to testify.
You think he will testify?
I think he will. I think because, he might think he's going down here.
I'll bet $5.
No wager in the room.
Look, his lawyers are going to advise him not to testify. They're going to try and keep him off the stand. But he is the former president of the United States. If he wants to get on that witness stand, he's going to do that.
Two things. Number one, what I'm going to tell him is, if I'm with him tonight, we did the best we can. This is what we got. But tomorrow's really important. We just saw what happened. We lost two jurors the other day, right? Or within 48 hours. There's a high likelihood that something will happen with one of these other jurors. So alternate number one and alternate number two and maybe even alternate number three are very important. I want you to pay attention. I want you to be involved. I want you to tell me who to pick and who not to pick. And look, just be cool. You know, the song from West Side Story, Be Cool, Boy. Just be cool. Just try to relax and just let us do our job.
So let's talk about that. Because, at first reflex, I'm the non-lawyer at the table. These 12 other jurors, they're the ones who are going to go in the room. How important are the alternates? What is your strategy for them? Because you're right. Somebody could, make a mistake and read about the case. Somebody could deliberately post on social media. Somebody could cross the line.
The longer the trial is, statistically speaking, the higher likelihood that something happens to one of them. Like a kid gets sick or something or whatever.
And so are you making the same arguments to all 17?
Yes.
If you take the 12 plus the 5? Or is there a strategy to somehow target people differently?
It's like one big blanket. They're all the same person until the judge sends them in the jury room.
High likelihood that some of those alternates are making it on. They're going to take the alternate selection as seriously as the selection for the regular jury.
John, you have to envision the fact that there's going to be a family emergency, there's going to be witness intimidation, there's going to be someone who gets ill. And so you have to look at the collective pool and as an alternate, that's a juror. And so to that extent, they're actually our juror. We saw what happened. There were 7 jurors at the start of the day. Then there were 5, right? Now there's 12 plus an alternate. And so I think that the entirety of the jury pool, to Arthur's point, you speak to all of them.
Kristen, Joey Jackson, Renato Stabile, Arthur Idala, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. I know an election year. This wouldn't surprise most of you.
The Kennedy family endorses Joe Biden for president.
But remember this, all of those next to President Biden on that stage today, flesh and blood to one of Biden's rivals in this race, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. His own brothers and sisters don't want him to win. We go straight to the source. Kerry Kennedy is here next. Today, a dozen members of the Kennedy family formally threw their support behind President Joe Biden's reelection. The public show of support for Biden was also a public rebuke of one of their own, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., his own family calling his independent bid for president dangerous. Joining me now to discuss is Kerry Kennedy, the sister of RFK Jr., and a human rights activist who introduced President Biden at today's event. Kerry Kennedy, grateful for your time. Describing your brother's candidacy as dangerous, is that because you view it as dangerous because it could cost Joe Biden the election, or do you think your brother would be a dangerous president? Does he not have the temperament or the experience?
No, I think, you know, this is an extraordinary election. We are on the precipice here in the United States. There's only two candidates who have any prayer of getting the 270 electoral votes that they need to become president. One is Trump, the other is Biden. Trump has said that he wants to rewrite the Constitution so that he can go after his enemies, including members of the press. He said that he will be a dictator on day one. He's proudly said that he packed the Supreme Court in order to overturn Roe v. Wade and take away women's rights over their health care. The list goes on and on and on. President Biden, on the other hand, came in at a time with a disastrous economy, has built that up, has overseen 14 million new jobs, 800,000 new manufacturing jobs, has always been on the side of women, wrote the Violence Against Women Act, and marched with the United Auto Workers and has spent his entire life working on behalf of working men and women in this country, not the enormous corporations and the wealthiest Americans who Trump has said he's going to give a tax cut to. So I think the choice is clear. It's either Trump or Biden. And a vote that's not for Biden is, let's be clear, a vote for Trump. Don't do it. Vote for Trump. Excuse me. Vote for Biden.
You are among the Kennedy family members who've used Donald Trump as a threat to democracy. Your brother was on this network not long ago. Aaron Burnett put the question to him. Listen.
I think that is a threat to democracy. If trying to overthrow the election clearly is a threat to democracy. But the question was, who is a worse threat to democracy? And what I would say is, I'm not going to answer that question, but I can argue that President Biden is.
He says he can argue President Biden is just a great or even a greater threat to democracy than Donald Trump. You would say?
Well, I think that anybody who's paying attention would not say that, which is why that's not what was said. What we really need to look at here is who are these two men and what have they done? President Trump spent a month trying to overturn a free election and then fomented an insurrection at the Capitol. That's very, very clear. There's no question about it. So he has said he wants to be a dictator on day one. He has cozied up to Putin, to the dictators in North Korea, in China, in Turkey, and beyond. This is not somebody who is a huge fan of democracy. So I think we need democracy. I think we need decency. I think we need all of the values that the Kennedy family has always stood for, human rights, and that are personified by Senator Robert Kennedy, my father, my uncle, President John Kennedy, of course, my uncle Ted, and that's President Biden today.
Just today. Your brother, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., qualified for the ballot in Michigan, which you know is one of the five or six battleground states that will decide who the next president is. If you look at the polling right there, Trump at 40%, Joe Biden at 34%, your brother, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., at 18%. That's Ross Perot-like numbers there in April. You say that's dangerous because Donald Trump would win the state. I know this is difficult, but when I ask you about your brother, you keep referring to Donald Trump and Joe Biden. do you think your brother would be a good president?
I don't think that that's even a question we need to deal with today, because there's only two people who are capable of getting 270 electoral college votes. So let's talk about reality. Let's not talk about who might or might not be a good president. The question today is, who do you vote for? When you go to the polls, are you going to vote for a country based on you know, when Martin Luther King died, and my father was speaking in Indianapolis to a crowd that John Lewis had organized for him, he said, what we need in the United States is not vision, division. What we need in the United States is not anger and rage and lawlessness. What we need in the United States is justice and compassion and peace, and especially towards those who suffer the most in our country, whether they be white or they be black. That's what we're looking for here. Who is going to give that to you? Is that going to be Donald Trump, or is that going to be Joe Biden? To me, it's clear.
Kerry Kennedy, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This news just into us. A flight tracking website now showing that multiple flights have been diverted over Iranian airspace. Situation we're closely monitoring amid all the chaos in the Middle East. We'll bring you any late developments as soon as we get them.